ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 15 टेक्स्ट नंबर 7। नृत्यन्ते मी शिखिन ईड्यमुदाहरिण्या कुर्वन्ति गोप्य इव ते प्रियमीक्षणेन सूक्तैश्च कोकिलगणा गृहमागताय धन्यावनौकस इयान् हि सतां निसर्ग। Translation: O worshipable one, these peacocks are dancing before you out of joy. These doe are pleasing you with affectionate glances, just as the gopis do. And these cuckoos are honoring you with Vedic prayers. All these residents of the forest are most fortunate, and their behavior toward you certainly befits great souls receiving another great soul at home. So this has no purport. We'll read text 8. धन्येन्य मध्यधरणी तृणवीरूढस्तत्पादस्पृशो द्रुमलता करजाभिमृष्टा नद्योद्रय खगमृगा सदयावलोकैर्गोप्योऽन्तरेण भुजयोरपि यत्स्पृहाश्री। ट्रांसलेशन प्रपोर्ट बाय द डिसाइपल्स ऑफ श्रील प्रभुपाद। दिस अर्थ हैज नाउ बिकम मोस्ट फॉर्चुनेट बिकॉज यू हैव टच्ड हर ग्रास एंड बुशेस विथ योर फीट and her trees and creepers with your fingernails. And because you have grazed her rivers, mountains, birds, and animals with your merciful glances. But above all, you have embraced the young cowherd women between your two arms, a favor hankered after by the goddess of fortune herself. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The word Adya now indicates the time of Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna's appearance on the earth. In his form of Varaha, Lord Krishna personally saved the earth. And indeed, the earth is understood to rest perpetually on the potency of Shesha. Both Varaha and Shesha are expansions of Balaram, who is himself an expansion of Lord Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna's statement that this earth has now become most fortunate, Dhanyenya Madhya Dharani, indicates that nothing can equal the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his personal form as Krishna, appearing simultaneously with his plenary expansion, Balaram. The compound word, Karajabhimrishta, touched by your fingernails, indicates that as Krishna and Balaram would move through the forest, they would pick fruits and flowers from the trees, bushes and creepers, and use this paraphernalia in their pleasure pastimes. Sometimes they would break leaves off the plants and use them with the flowers to decorate their bodies. Krishna and Balaram would glance lovingly and mercifully at all the rivers, hills and creatures in Vrindavan. But the blessing received by the gopis, being embraced directly between the Lord's arms, was a supreme benediction, desired even by the goddess of fortune herself. The goddess of fortune, who lives in Vaikuntha on the chest of Lord Narayan, once desired to be embraced on the chest of Sri Krishna, and thus she performed severe austerities to achieve this blessing. Sri Krishna informed her that her actual place was in Vaikuntha and that it was not possible for her to dwell upon his chest in Vrindavan. Therefore, she begged Krishna to allow her to remain on his chest in the form of a golden lion, and he granted her this benediction. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur recounts this incident from the Puranas. Hare Krishna. So before I begin, I would like to seek the blessings of all the devotees here so that I can speak something on this subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we see how Lord Krishna is addressing Lord Balaram. And these verses are the conversation between Krishna and Balaram. So as Krishna and Balaram are entering into the Vrindavan forest, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan the trees, the peacocks, all the animals, the bees, everyone are bowing down in front of these two lords. And they are expressing their joy, their happiness at the arrival of Krishna and Balaram. And their joy doesn't know any bounds. They are dancing, they are singing, trying to express their ecstasy in various forms. So, in this verse and in the previous verse also, we saw how the beauty of Vrindavan is expressed in great detail. The peacocks are said to dance very ecstatically. Here we find how the does and the peacocks, the does are pleasing with their affectionate glances, the just like the gopis. The cuckoos are honoring you with Vedic prayers. So it is said the Vrindavan forest provides satisfaction to all the five senses of Krishna. In one purport, the recently read purport, we saw that. How the wind is carrying the aroma of the lotus flowers and giving pleasure to Krishna's nostrils. The breeze is providing pleasing touch sensation to Krishna's body. And the sound of the bees and other animals, their singing is providing nice pleasure to Krishna's ears. And the entire forest is giving pleasure to Krishna, the entire sight. It provides a sense of satisfaction to Krishna's eyes. So in this way, the whole forest is providing that gratification, the real sense gratification for Krishna and Balaram. In a perverted way, we find here how the material world is trying to provide, or the conditioned souls are trying to extract as much sense gratification through these five senses as possible in the form of various entertainment, mundane entertainment. Especially in movies and other forms of entertainment, we find how extreme forms of emotions are expressed. Like any movie, you will find extreme form of violence, romance and fear and horror. That's how they have to agitate the audience. If it is just ordinary romance and violence, then no one is shaken up. Somehow you have to shake up the audience, so you have to give extreme forms of this violence, and that's how the senses are titillated. And that's what we call as enjoyment. So people go to watch all these kinds of things to get their senses agitated. So here in the spiritual world, it's exactly the opposite. Every living entity, every personality in the land of Raja is trying to give that sense gratification to the personality of Godhead. So in this verse, we find how the earth, planet earth, is feeling extremely fortunate because Krishna and Balaram are traversing on the land of Vrajabhumi. The footprints of Krishna and Balaram are considered to be the decorations on the planet Earth. Previously, as in the purport, it says, when Varahadev lifted Mother Earth, that's when she became fortunate. I recently read an atheistic comment by Stephen Hawking, the famous atheist scientist. He says, there is this cause, there is this theory that the planets are resting on elephant. And so there is a professor who is giving a lecture on astronomy. And he says, at the end of the class, one old lady stands up and she says, "You professor, you're so foolish. Don't you know that this earth is resting on an elephant?" So the professor says, "Yes, really? And what is the elephant resting on?" So she says, "The elephant is resting on a turtle." "And what about the turtle? What is the turtle resting on?" "It is resting on another turtle." "And what is that turtle resting on?" "Come on, don't be so foolish. There are turtles all the way down to hold these planets up." And then this professor comments how this theory that planets are resting on some animal, giant animal, it originated in India, indirectly saying that these Vedic scriptures are propagating this mythological story that all these planets are resting on different kinds of animals. So here it is said how both Vara and Shesha are expansions of Balaram, who is himself an expansion of Lord Krishna, the original personality of Godhead. And the earth is understood to rest perpetually on the potency of Shesha. Even in the Gita, we find that verse. Gama Vishcha Bhutani Dharayam Yahamojasa. How the planets are orbiting by Krishna's potency. So, unless with our mundane eyes, we cannot understand these things, but from the scriptures, we understand how the planets are orbiting in their particular orbits by the potency of the Supreme Lord. So, in these verses, the series of verses, we find how Krishna is giving all credit to Lord Balaram. Although Krishna knows when he is entering into the forest, all the animals are paying respects to him. But still, he says, O Lord Balaram, because you are the original personality of Godhead, look how these animals are offering you respect out of joy. So, this is the nature of the Lord. He always tries to give credit to his devotees, the other living entities. So this attitude of giving credit to others is a very common thing in the spiritual world. So Krishna gives all credit to his devotees, and in turn the devotees feel highly grateful in reciprocation. In contrast, in the material world we find how the master is always trying to avoid giving credit to his subordinates. And there are so many cases where some employees perform excellent job, excellent performance, and the master in turn takes all the credit. And the servant in turn feels how the master is never trying to give me credit, all credit he is taking, and he feels arrogant and proud and tries to rebel and revolt against the authorities. So this is a stark contrast we find in the spiritual and material world. Always trying to protect my position and never trying to let others come up and grow in the organization. So Krishna, as we find in the Nectar of Devotion, where Prabhupada explains how Krishna is always ready to share his opulences with everyone. We have these five kinds of liberation: Sarupya, Samipya, Salukya, Sashti, and Sayujya. Where Krishna is trying to share his personal abode, personal form, other opulences with anyone who is desiring to achieve them. It is said the forms of the residents of Vaikuntha have the same, identical with Lord Vishnu or Krishna. It's very difficult to recognize who is Lord Vishnu and who is a devotee. There only some few characteristics are there for Lord Vishnu that makes him unique from other individuals. So Krishna is ready to share his opulences, his personal form, his abode with anyone who is wanting to get them. He doesn't say this is mine, not trying to restrict. But here in this world we find how everyone is trying to hold on to their attachments, never trying to give off. Even in the Gita, Krishna says Idam jnanam upashritya mama sadharmyam agata sarge pinopajayante pralayana. In the 14th chapter, Krishna says, whoever tries to understand this knowledge, with that person I share whatever I have for eternity. So this is the nature of Krishna. He always wants to share his personal fame and opulences with his devotees. In the fifth canto, I believe, where the story of Rishabhdev and King Bharat. There, the place where Rishabhdev used to stay, that place is known as Ajanabha, derived from the king's name, King Nabhi, his son Rishabhdev. So that place is known as Ajanabha. And later on, when Rishabhdev retired and his son, King Bharat, became the king of the planet, since then, the land became known as Bharatvarsha. Before King Bharata, the land was known as Ajanabha. So here is Rishabhdev, the personality of Godhead, an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And he doesn't take all the credit upon himself. As soon as he saw Bharat became the king, and the land became known as Bharatvarsha. So the credit goes from Rishabhdev and his ancestors to the next generation. And till now we find the whole land is the whole earth. At least the land of India is known as Bharatvarsha. So how Krishna is giving credit, that is a theme. How Krishna is giving credit to his devotees without trying to restrict and hold on to himself. In the fourth canto, we find the story of Lord Shiva instructing. This is the story immediately after the Daksha Yagya. Daksha is cursed and everything is settled, the sacrifice is performed. And finally, Lord Brahma tries to satisfy Lord Shiva. So there this incident comes where when Lord Brahma goes to the land of Kailash, there he finds all the plants are as good as desire trees. So there Prabhupada explains how desire trees are usually found in the spiritual world. You don't find them in the material world or any other place. But here in this land of Kailash, the land of Lord Shiva, the trees are as good as the desire trees, Kalpa Vriksha trees. And he explains how a devotee of Krishna naturally obtains all the opulences that is there in Krishna's planet. So although the Kalpa Vriksha trees are not found anywhere else, because Lord Shiva is the greatest devotee, Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu, therefore you find these desire trees even in the land of Kailash. And then we know the famous story of Krishna kidnapping Rukmini, where all the kings are attacking and Rukmini is afraid. She is extremely frightened upon seeing all these enemy soldiers attacking Krishna. So there Prabhupada explains how Krishna, when he saw the fear in Rukmini's eyes, he says, "These army, your men will easily defeat the opposing forces." So there, how Krishna is ready immediately. Just a few minutes ago he got married. He kidnapped Rukmini. Not exactly officially married also. Kidnapped Rukmini, and immediately he has declared that all my army men and everything, all my opulences and treasure belongs to you. And in the Kurukshetra war, we find how those who were killed by Arjuna, usually one who is killed by Krishna gets liberation. But in the Kurukshetra war, it is said the warriors who were killed by Arjuna's arrows, they got purified of their sinful reactions. And then by looking at Krishna's face, Krishna's form, they got liberated. So simply by, even though killed by Arjuna, they got the same benediction as good as when they are killed by Krishna himself. So this is how the Lord, Supreme Lord, is ready to share his opulences with anyone who is worshipping him, any of his devotees. In this verse, we find how the does are pleasing Krishna with their affectionate glances. It is compared to the same glance like the gopis. Just as gopis please Krishna, in a similar way, the does are pleasing Krishna with their glances. So Krishna doesn't discriminate between gopis and other living entities. We know how gopis are the topmost devotees, they are the most dear ones to the Lord. But here, the devotional service of the does are equated with the devotional service of the gopis. So devotional service is absolute in that sense, how everyone's devotional service is giving pleasure to Krishna. Radhika Vallabhprabhu gave this nice example how if you have two numbers, one small number, say 2 or 3, and you have a big number, 1,000. So the difference between 2 and 1,000 is so big. But if you divide it by 0, 2 by 0 and 1,000 by 0, both are infinity. 2 by 0 is also infinity, 1,000 by 0 also infinity. So dividing by 0 is like is like making it absolute. The numerator doesn't matter, but once it is divided by zero, the value of infinity is the same. So similarly, no matter what our insignificant position may be in the material world, if we are trying to please Krishna, then Krishna is pleased with that little devotion service, no matter what our original position is. Just like that story of Lord Ram. The squirrel also trying to please Lord Ram, and Hanuman is also pleasing Lord Ram. And Lord Ram didn't discriminate between the two services performed by these two living entities. So a servant is grateful. When the service is done, Krishna is ready to share, and the servant doesn't become arrogant or take all the credit, although Krishna is wanting to give credit. And we find how a lot in the story of Prahlad and Narsingdev. After Narsingdev benedicted Prahlad, Prahlad is so grateful to Narad Muni, to Narsingdev, for protecting him and for saving him from the so many tortures performed by his father. So Prahlad says, when Lord Narsingdev is ready to offer him all benedictions, Prahlad doesn't accept anything. His only desire is, let me continue serving Narad Muni, who saved me from this hellish, demonic condition. So Prahlad is feeling grateful for that. Usually we find, whenever we have one authority, we are obeying, we are under one authority, and after some time, the authority may change. We may be under someone else. Like, initially we may have come to Krishna consciousness by some person, some devotee might have brought us. So till then, we obey him, we follow all his instructions, all his directions. But then, after a few years, we may have to follow someone else, or some superior authority. So the general tendency is, we then stop showing respect to the first authority, and we think, now that I am advanced, I will follow the next authority, the senior authority. But here we find Prahlad, although the Supreme Lord Narsingdev is benedicting him, offering him all benedictions, Prahlad doesn't forget his first authority, Narad Muni. He wishes to continue his service to Narad Muni unbroken, and that's how he wants to serve Narsingdev, through the medium of Narad Muni. So this is one peculiar, unique feature we find in spiritual circles, where no one is trying to bypass one's superior authority. So peacocks are dancing, everyone is dancing, expressing their joy. This is the nature of devotion service. Absolute nature, always increasing. That famous verse, moksha lagutakrit. Kleshagni shubada, moksha lagutakrit sudurlava. Rupa Goswami explains how devotion service is constantly increasing, and it minimizes the happiness one derives from impersonal liberation. There is this nice series of verses. I was inspired by Vrajbihari Prabhu's quoting Chaitanya Charitamrita verses in his Bhagavatam class. So I thought, let me extract some CC verses where the glories of devotion service over the happiness derived from impersonal liberation is compared. So I hope I can sing this. So this is the glories of Advaita Acharya in the Adilila, where the glories of Advaita Acharya is described. And before that story, that famous story where Advaita Acharya wants to pretend like a Mayavadi and attract Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Just before that incident, this series of verses come. So these verses describe how the happiness derived out of impersonal liberation is inferior to the happiness derived out of devotion service to Krishna. So this text 44 says, Krishna dasa abhimane ye ananda sindhu, koti brahma sukhana he tara eka bindu. The conception of servitude to Sri Krishna generates such an ocean of joy in the soul that even the joy of oneness with the absolute, if multiplied 10 million times, could not compare to a drop of it. Nityananda and I are servants of Lord Chaitanya. Nowhere else is there such joy as that which is tasted in this emotion of servitude. The most beloved goddess of fortune resides on the chest of Sri Krishna, yet she too earnestly prays for the joy of service at his lotus feet. So everyone, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lakshmiji, everyone is hankering for that opportunity to serve Krishna's lotus feet, so that the happiness derived out of anything else appears like an insignificant drop in the desert. Dasya bhave anandita parishadagana vidibhava narada rashuka sanatana. Now the associates, the great authorities who are experiencing this joy that is mentioned. All the associates of Lord Krishna, such as Brahma, Shiva, Narada, Shuka and Sanat Kumar, are very pleased in this sentiment of servitude. Nityananda avadhuta sabate agala chaitanya radasya preme hoila pagala. Sri Nityananda, the wandering mendicant, is the foremost of all the associates of Lord Chaitanya. He became mad in the ecstasy of service to Lord Chaitanya. Srivasa Haridasa Ramadasa Gadadhar Murari Mukunda Chandra Shekhar Vakreshwar Esava Panditaloka Parama Mahatva Chaitanya Radasya Sabaya Karaye Unmatta. Srivasa Haridasa Ramadasa Gadadhar Murari Mukunda Chandra Shekhar and Vakreshwar are all glorious and are all learned scholars. But the sentiment of servitude to Lord Chaitanya makes them mad in ecstasy. So, this is how Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami compares and describes the happiness one derives. He doesn't even talk about the happiness one derives out of material things. That is considered totally insignificant. And the happiness derived out of impersonal Brahman, which so many philosophers are hankering for, that is compared to an insignificant drop in the desert when compared to the happiness derived out of service to Lord Chaitanya. So, this is how these animals here, the animals of Vrindavan, they have absolutely no interest in trying to enjoy any other happiness. As soon as Krishna and Balaram is entering the forest, that's their perfection of life. That joy, singing about them, glorifying them, dancing for them, glancing at them. No other joy can compare even to a drop. That is an unlimited joy they experience. So, here one interesting line comes where Krishna is saying, this behavior of these animals befits great souls receiving another great soul. So, how to receive great souls? That is a very important of our Vaishnava culture. So, this interesting incident comes in the fourth canto where Prithu Maharaj is welcoming the four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras coming, and Prithu sets the ideal example of how one can receive all the great souls, or any great soul. That's the ideal example King Prithu sets. So Kumaras are coming, and it's explained, the translation explains how, just like the senses are attracted to material objects of enjoyment, that's how Prithu was attracted to these four Kumaras. A negative way of glorifying someone. Just like a conditioned soul is attracted to enjoy sense objects, that's how when the Kumaras appeared in the scene, Prithu got up and welcomed the four Kumaras. His mind was immediately attracted to the qualities of the four Kumaras. So, Prabhupada explains there how birds of a feather flock together. How every person is attracted to that kind of person who has similar qualities. A drunkard is attracted to another drunkard. A smoker is attracted to another smoker. So similarly, because Prithu is attracted to the Kumaras, that shows Prithu was on the level of Kumaras. Although externally he may appear to be an ordinary householder, a king, and the Kumaras are on the renounced order. But because Prithu is attracted to Kumaras, that shows Prithu is actually on the same level. So that's how he welcomes the four Kumaras. Immediately bows down, took the Charanamrit, washes their feet, takes the Charanamrit and sprinkles it on his head and gives them a seat. Immediately gets down from his throne, offers the golden throne to the chief of the four Kumaras, Sanat Kumar, and then says pleasing words, welcomes them. And the most important thing, he doesn't ask about their material welfare. Prithu is asking about the ultimate goal of life. He assumes that they are already well. They are happy in their devotion service. He never bothers to ask them, how are you and how is everything, how is your health, and no such questions. He asks them, what is the duty, what is the ultimate goal of a human being? That's the question he's asking. So this is how we should approach a saintly person. Not inquiring about some mundane things, but about the actual purpose of this human form of life. And in that section, Prabhupada explains, if you don't receive a guest properly, especially a saintly person, then that home is the home of poisonous snakes. A home where saintly people are not welcomed and received properly, that home is a place of poisonous snakes, where only envious people reside. The members of such a family, such a household, are compared to poisonous snakes. So this is how Krishna and Balaram, the two greatest lords, as soon as they enter Vrindavan forest, everyone is expressing joy, welcoming them. And Prabhupada gives an interesting section, interesting analogy, especially of the West, how in the West you find these boards, trespassers not allowed, beware of dog. In India we find kutto se saavdhan. These things shows how modern people are not at all interested in receiving anyone. Guests are absolutely not welcome, unless you give prior information so that they can make arrangements. Otherwise, unknown atithi seva is now becoming more and more rare. So, Gaur Gopal gives the example. In the Satya Yuga, there was this slogan. What is that? Atithi Deva Bhava Satya Yuga slogan. Treta Yuga was the slogan. Shubhlab. In Dwapar Yuga, there was something else. And in Kali Yuga, the slogan is Kutto Se Savdhan. Beware of dogs. That's how the degradation of age happens. So welcoming guests is an important part of our Vedic culture, and that is unfortunately going away. So in this purport, we find how as soon as Krishna saw all these living entities, all these animals and bees, he reciprocated by glancing at them affectionately. So, we find how Krishna is treating objects with personal care. The stones, the trees, the mountains, the rivers. Of course, we understand the spiritual world, everything is a personality. But Krishna is treating even seemingly dead objects like persons. So, what to speak of actual, the residents of Vrindavan, the gopas, the gopis, and other residents. He was exchanging such affection with everyone that everyone felt completely satisfied. Total satisfaction. In contrast, we find in the material world, even living persons are treated like objects. Because we are accustomed to working with machines throughout the day, morning till afternoon till evening, we are accustomed to, at least not the temple resident, as devotees we may not watch, but outsiders, throughout the day they are sitting in front of the television or in front of the computer, and they have the remote, change the channels. So the machine has been designed to give the best sense gratification to the audience or the person who is using it. Like for example, if you are sitting in front of the television, you have the remote control, you don't have to even walk till the device, can immediately change the channels, hundreds of channels, switch over to anyone, and enjoy. Watch whatever you want. In the computer you have, give any command, the machine obeys strictly. It's total surrendered servant. Everything will be followed exactly as you want. So one who is habituated to deal with machines throughout the day and interact less with living people, as soon as such a person comes in front of a living person, he expects that the living person will behave like the ideal behavior of the machine. So machine behaves ideally, reciprocates nicely, obeys your command fully, and as soon as we come and deal with interact with people, we are in that mode that the human being should behave ideally. I tell him something, the person should behave, the person should reciprocate. But unfortunately, that the remote doesn't work on human being. The television will obey completely, but as soon as you are dealing with a human being, the remote doesn't work. So that's how relationship problems occur. Because we are not habituated to getting a response, something that is different from our expectation. The computer or the television will respond as soon as we send a command. We know, okay, the machine has to respond like this, and it will respond if I give the command. But when it comes to dealing with human being, dealing with people, that response is not exactly as we want. That's why we find so many conflicts happening, relationship problems happening between two individuals, two husband and wife, mother and father, individually, family, socially, so many conflicts arising just because of not able to tolerate and accommodate each other. Yes, it is escalating state-wise between two states. Everyone wants a different state. A different country, countries are breaking up, international issues. So all this because we are the life with machines are increasing and personal dealings are reducing. If you see just two people walking with each other, it is so difficult to have a conversation for a significant amount of time. Two friends walking, they will exchange some words, immediately there is a Each of them will take up their cell phone and will start talking to someone who is 1,000 miles away. So difficult to have personal conversation and relation with anyone. We are habituated to dealing with machines. And that's why so many relationship issues are increasing throughout the world. So Bhagavatam culture, the Vaishnava culture, teaches us to treat not only every human being as a human being, even every other object as personal, conscious living beings. That's the nature of the spiritual world. Chintamani, every dust, every tree, every mountain, every stone, every object is a living, conscious being. So unless we develop that attitude of dealing with everyone in that personal touch. Interestingly, computers and other machines try to make it as personal as possible. You see, you switch on a computer and then it will say, loading your personal settings, giving you the command. Everything is so personalized, customized, to give us that experience of a personal, that personality. The computer will behave exactly like a living person. The software is made like that, the hardware is made like that, so that you get that personal feeling. Facebook and all is just to give you that personal feeling. But when it comes to human being, that personalism is reducing gradually. So with this culture, we hope to reach that state where we increase that personal relationship with everyone. We have to, unless we train ourselves in that mode in this world while living here, when we go back to spiritual world, we won't be used to that culture. Therefore, the Krishna Consciousness Movement is trying to propagate that personal culture where we have loving, intimate relationships with everyone, not only the living, not only the devotees, not only the human beings, but even with the ecology, the environment, everything we have to treat as persons. The river is treated as a person, mountains are treated as a person, Bhumi Devi, earth is treated as a person. Behind every natural phenomena, we understand there is a living personality controlling that object or phenomenon. So, I will stop here. If anyone has any question or comment, can take one or two. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki...